Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis, go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
Outdoor Living now consistently ranks either first or second in features that people want in either a new or a remodel home. It's no longer a trend, it's really an expectation. And we hear this from builders throughout the country. Even some of the large national builders are saying, we need to add outdoor living spaces to our new homes or people won't buy them. That is a fundamental shift from 5 years ago. But 5 years ago is like, well, we can't offer that because it'll take away from the kitchen upgrade, right?
So welcome to the podcast today. We have Joe Reboin on with us. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, Brad. Yep, glad to be here. Thank you.
I'm excited to have you on. So Joe is the Vice President of Design at Oldcastle APG, a CRH company. That's quite the title there.
It's a mouthful. Yeah. Really confusing, that's for sure. But that's great.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we here in Phoenix, you know, the outdoor space is a huge part of what we do. You know, my ties to Oldcastle and Bellegarde go back quite a ways. I mean, you may not know this, Joe, but, you know, I worked early in my career on a huge hotel resort here in town, and we worked with the team at Bellegarde and Oldcastle, did the entire resort, the Omni Monte Lucia in Paradise Valley, and one of the signature projects in town. So going on 20 years now, and you guys put out some amazing product.
Awesome. Well, I didn't know that, but really appreciate it. That's great.
So maybe let me start here. You know, outdoor living, I know this is something you're passionate about, Joe, and I am as well, as I kind of alluded to, but, you know, just based on all of your experience in the industry, you know, human interactions, motivation, happiness, I mean, all these things that come from being outside, what are things that you've noticed? Why is Oldcastle so passionate about that space?
I love that question, by the way. That's if you've heard my other podcasts or other interviews, I've talked about this often. You know, I started in this space as a contractor in 1992. So it's, I can't believe already 32 years being in quote outdoor living. And back in the day, you know, the beginning in outdoor living space was, let's say a 10 by 15 foot slab of concrete or Holland stone patio, right? It's like, so if you see, you know, you watch that evolution over the last three decades, the thing for me, and I was a contractor for about 17 years, and I've been on the manufacturing side for the rest of that time. It's always fascinated me to try and understand the drivers behind why people buy and build these spaces, right? Because as you know, I mean, you're in construction. They're not easy to achieve necessarily, right? If, especially if you're looking at a large comprehensive space with all the bells and whistles. And despite that, I mean, they can, you know, cost many, many thousands of dollars, if not in hundreds of thousands in some cases. And it's fairly disruptive. It can be expensive. It's messy. But despite all that, we've seen this exponential growth in the industry. And this is, you know, it's cool being a part of a company as big as Oldcastle and CRH. You know, we have a global perspective really on what's going on. And, you know, when you pause and you step back for a second, you're like, it doesn't matter where people live, what they look like, what their income level is. There's something about outdoor living that just resonates, right? It's like, if you see, you know, a beautiful fire pit, universally people see like, they don't even know why, but I love that. I want that. That's the response. And what's interesting is over the last 5 years, I would say, especially worldwide, there's this growing awareness of why that is, right? I think some of this you would think is intuitive, but you know, they're studying how our brains respond to being in natural environments, and roughly 95% of our brain is subconscious, right? So we're not even thinking about this. We're just reacting to things. But when they monitor our brain waves, when we're in a natural environment, there's all these amazing things that happen. Within 20 minutes, our stress levels drop, our dopamine and serotonin levels spike. Our stress levels drop, in fact, up to 40% within like a half an hour. Our average heartbeat rate drops to 6 to 8 beats per minute. And so it's interesting. I think we all feel this way. And I think this is why when it's a nice day, we're drawn to be outside. Like, you know, think about spring fever, right? When it gets nice, we're like, I hate being in an office. I got to be outside, right? And that's universal, right? So that underlying driver is what we believe is really drawing people to want these spaces. Now, as being part of the industry, whether you're a builder, designer, right, architect, I think understanding this is critical, because you can use this information to really develop something that truly is transformational for your client, right? When you understand that number one, being exposed daily to nature is fundamental to who we are as people, right? I mean, we just need that. And if you understand that, you can think about, well, how can I design this space so that someone can use this on a daily basis in a way that really enhances their life? And clearly, outdoor living spaces are always going to be part of a place to entertain, but they're also a place to just de-stress, unwind, read a book, meditate, exercise, work remote. Like, those are key parts of it as well, which I think are oftentimes overlooked. So for Oldcastle, you know, when we think about who we are, I mean, we really pride ourselves on offering the solution in terms of products for the space. But ultimately, you know, the tagline "Live Well Outside" to us really means whether you can afford a very elaborate space or you can afford a bag of gravel to build a fire on, like, it should be attainable for all, because the benefits of that are so far reaching, right? In terms of the health and wellness, kind of that everyday, that balance that that we all need is super important.
What's interesting, Joe, is you're really knowledgeable, even going through, like, you know, the heartbeats, you know, as people change. But as you're sharing that, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, look, I live in Phoenix, and in Phoenix, we're very fortunate that we have sun most of the year, right? But the funny thing about Phoenix is people don't realize the desert gets pretty cold. So in those winter months, you know, December, January, February, which can be a little cold, you know, this year we had a little bit more rain than typical, but now here we are, you know, later in the season, and sun's out. And so kids are outside swimming. They're coming home from school wanting to swim. I was just at a project recently, and, you know, we're outside, of course, Oldcastle and Bellegarde is all over through this design we have. And the client was playing their speakers, and there's just like energy. You're sitting outside, as you mentioned, and you have the speakers going, you have these amazing amenities, and it's inspirational, right? It's like you mentioned the stress, how that lowers, and how naturally a lot of us just don't get enough time outside.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I almost feel in some ways I'm a bit of an evangelist about this, because I feel like, you know, you look at where we're at as a society, I think we all crave something that's more authentic and feel like there's something that's maybe slightly amiss versus what was years ago, right? And a lot of that is the social connection. And you look at what COVID did for our business in general. I mean, it absolutely, we exploded. I mean, that we had exponential growth over several years. And I think part of that was, again, this kind of rediscovery of people pausing for a minute. And if there was any silver lining, I think this is it, where we kind of reassessed what's important, right? And when we were outside, we're like, hey, you know what? I feel better out here. Like, I don't know why, but I just feel better. And you think, you mentioned, it's this visceral experience of feeling the wind, hearing the birds, you know, seeing the sun, and, you know, and again, how our brain is reacting. It's, you think about where we lived for thousands of years, right? We lived in these rural environments. We had long views. We were very much connected to the earth. It's only over the last 100 years, really, where the majority of the world now is moving into these urban areas. And I don't think we're really fully aware of what the long-term implications of that are yet, right? Where, you know, we get in a car, we drive to work, we sit in a cubicle, we drive home, we watch Netflix, right? You mm-hmm. think about the average, not just American, the average industrialized person's life. What we do know is that most people, the average American, spends less than 30 minutes a day outside now. And if you look back a few decades ago, it was about 2 hours. And one of the things I love to point out is, you know, especially with children, I mean, most kids today are on some type of a device about 7 hours, right? You think about iPads, phones, TVs, all of it. It's probably more than that for many, many kids, honestly. And so we don't know the implications of that either, right? Long term. But we do know that we do. And for instance, we mandate that prisoners spend about an hour or two a day outside. Why? Because we know that they're more well-behaved. And so we think about, like, we're not using that same logic for our own lives. Like, we are, there's some great quotes by people who are much smarter than me who are, you know, studying this. And they're like, you know, we like to think that we're here and nature's here, but the reality is we're intrinsically tied to nature. And by kind of extracting ourselves out of it, we're starting to see, at least we believe, some of the implications of that, right? I mean, stress, anxiety, there's all kinds of mental health issues. And the beauty of that is, when you think about, like, if you just walk outside when you're feeling stressed, I consciously try to do this now. Like, I don't know why I feel stressed. It could be whatever, right? There's things with family, work, whatever. If you go outside and just walk for 10 minutes, it at least feels better, right? You may not have solved the problem, but you feel better. So I think when we talk about outdoor living, I think to broaden the term beyond just a place of entertainment, it's a place of really kind of a reconnection, I think is a different way to look at it.
Well, this really paints the picture to your earlier comment about the pandemic, you know, and kind of tying off this, it's interesting. I have 6 kids myself, and so life's pretty busy, but I notice a huge difference when we go outside. As I mentioned, we're swimming, they're at the park. I mean, you're doing these activities, and I notice a huge difference in their, I don't want to say anxiety, but just their attitude, right? Their stresses, you know, and mm-hmm. kids don't realize why they're acting a certain way. But what's interesting is, you know, we're working in a luxury space here in Phoenix and doing these incredible projects. And of course, Phoenix is catered to the indoor outdoor living, but even for us in our market, 2020, mm-hmm. we saw a huge pivot. I mean, people would do some, you know, they're always doing some typical nice backyards here in Arizona, but now it's right. exploded. I mean, that whole, when people were locked inside and realized the value of being outside, it totally changed.
Yeah, I think I agree too. It's funny. I have 5 kids, so I don't meet too many people who have more kids than me. Yeah, kids, you're right. I mean, when you think about kids when they're little, like, and you try to remember back when we were little, they're fascinated by nature, right? And until we kind of school that out of them in a way, they would prefer to be outside always, right? Looking at bugs, playing in the mud, dirt, all of it.
Throwing rocks.
And so I think you point some of these things out to people like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. It's just something that we're not conscious of. But I think your point about the pandemic, I think our belief is it created a new baseline of expectation where, and again, I don't think people are conscious about why they want these things. But where people, outdoor living is no longer a trend. It's really an expectation where people are, you know, thinking about, you know, and we hear this from builders throughout the country. Even some of the large national builders are saying, we need to add outdoor living spaces to our new homes or people won't buy them. That is a fundamental shift from 5 years ago. But 5 years ago is like, well, we can't offer that because it'll take away from the kitchen upgrade, right? So and when you talk to people, and I have tons of stats that we study every angle of this. The vast majority of Americans the vast majority already invested during COVID in their outdoor living space, but upwards of 60% still plan to invest fairly heavily in their outdoor living spaces. And so when you look at a lot of the research that's being done by trade organizations, whether it's through realtors, national builders, you know, remodelers, outdoor living now consistently ranks either first or second in features that people want in either a new or a remodel home. So again, we're constantly trying to figure out like what is the driver of that, right? And again, I think that's subconscious. People, it may be, I think it's one thing I look at and I go, well, they're seeing pictures of these beautiful spaces. There's an outdoor fireplace, a kitchen, and they want to keep up with their neighbors. But I think it's much deeper than that because there's easier things to buy than to buy an outdoor living space if that's really your driver, right? Like I can go buy a Corvette or a boat or, you know, a vacation home, but it takes somebody who really wants something like this to do it. And I'm not trying to paint the picture that these are unattainable by any means, but it can be a fairly lengthy process. So there's gotta be something deeper at heart there.
Well, there's some work to it. I mean, you give a good example there when you're saying, yeah, you could go buy something off the shelf, you know, a boat or a car. That's one thing. When you're building a luxury complex outdoor space, there's complexity. I mean, you're dealing, I know it varies all over the country, but specifically here, I mean, we're dealing, you know, with a complicated civil plan. There's grading and drainage. You know, we have some areas where you have to self-retain water on the property. And so looking at those data points, those elevations, it can be really complex where we're setting the pool and the fire pit and all these areas. And so to your point, and then you have to have the labor aspect and the material. So it's not just easy to snap the fingers. It comes out the shelf. There's a complexity to what we do in construction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interesting. I think when you look at some of the trends that we're seeing in this space as well, not only has the overall industry grown, the average size of the project has grown, I would say at about 25% versus pre-COVID. So when you think about why that is, and look at the spaces that are being designed, if someone's designing a space to be used every day versus, you know, let's say half a dozen times a year for a barbecue, it's a totally different value proposition, right? It was like, I'm using this every day. I'm going to put more value on it. I'm going to, you know, it makes more sense to me to invest in that. And I think the more that people see that and, you know, have friends and family that have these types of spaces, or they see it on TV or wherever, they're just becoming more accustomed to, this is part of what a home needs, right? It's just like, you need, you know, there's a lot of things we don't need in a home, but like you need a kitchen, you need your bedrooms, you need your bathroom. Like, I need an outdoor living space. It's just, you know, it's a no-brainer. And I would say it's interesting when you look back, every home up until the 1950s, for the most part, just about every home had a porch, which was the original outdoor living space, which was more social even. So I would say the outdoor living space today has really become the new porch. Like people are just, I need a space that connects me to the exterior. And it's not a footnote anymore.
No, it's not a footnote. And I'll take that a step further. Maybe a good example here is early in my career. Oh, this is probably 20 years ago. I was just starting, you know, in this field. And there was a mutual friend of mine, and he's essentially like, he's a veterinarian, but he's specifically, he does surgeries, right? So he does heart surgeries on dogs. And, you know, and I remember asking him, I said, Whit, like, do people, will they spend $10,000 on their dog, right? To, you know, that's a big investment for maybe, you know, a pet that maybe, who knows what the shelf life will be and, you know, the length there.
Yeah.
And his comment was interesting. He said, no, Brad, people spend $10,000 on a couch. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's interesting. And so his point was that, you know, when there's things of value, right, that are meaningful, you're going to invest in them because they bring happiness and joy to stress relievers. And what I've seen is that with our customers specifically, is one, you can't take it with you, right? So there is a point that, yeah, you don't want to live outside your means, but at the same time, people are investing in outdoor space. And I have a client, we have a mutual client, Ted Bainbridge, right? Mm-hmm. Who you know, and Ted has this incredible house and this incredible space. And we were just over there with some other clients for dinner at his home. And he has, you know, the multi-sliders, you know, automated, opened up. So you have that indoor, outdoor, you have this huge covered patio, the TV, the sitting area, the fire pit, the pool, the little golf putting area.
Yeah.
And the happiness, right? Everyone's out there conversing. They're enjoying the sunset. You can't, there's no value on that. So why not invest in this outdoor space? And I'm sure that's why you guys have, you know, you thrive so much, Joe, is because you're hitting all these senses where just as if the veterinarian who's doing the surgery, right? You're bringing this happiness into someone's life.
No, I love that. I mean, that for me, you know, it's probably the thing I miss most from being a contractor is creating those types of spaces and feeling that, you know, that it, that direct connection with the client. And I've had many clients over the years who had expressed, you know, feedback, like you were just saying, like, this space has literally changed my life. I mean, I'm spending more time with my wife or, you know, my significant other, my children, my neighbors. And, you know, they're creating these spaces to have these very authentic experiences. And the outdoor living space is really all about that, right? It's, again, like we touched on earlier, it's not just the natural inputs of, you know, sun, wind, the sound, all that, but these social connections. I mean, again, going back to some of this research that is happening worldwide, you think about society really began around the fire. You think about, like, you're sitting around the fire, you're having conversations, it's safe, it's warm, right? So this is just intrinsic and part of us, is that we desire to be in these spaces, having these social interactions. And I mean, what a super cool place to be, right? If you're building these types of environments, I can't think of anything better, honestly, that I would want to be a part of. I mean, you're building spaces that truly create incredible memories for people and experiences, and you can't replicate that in many other ways, right? You can't replicate it with buying a car, I would say, for the most part. I mean, you can have some cool experiences in a car for sure, but not quite the same.
Yeah, and I love this point, because I think many of us builders, and you've been a builder in the past, contractor, and I want to get into that, Joe, but essentially, we're looking for differentiators, right? How do we separate ourselves? And the example you gave is, you said, even at the production level, the entry home, people are coming in, they don't want that backyard of dirt, right? Where they have to do it themselves a year later or whatever it may be. Yeah. They want it finished, turnkey, in this. And any of our clients or prospective clients that have walked some of our projects and they see these amazing backyard spaces, right? Mm-hmm. It's a selling point. So there's collaboration there. Mm-hmm. For you, Joe, you mentioned that you had 17 years of experience, if I'm not mistaken, as contracting before joining Oldcastle.
Right.
You know, that's a big move, you know, from the other side. So maybe walk through those 17 years that led up to it.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I started a company with my brother, like, as I mentioned, 1992, outside Milwaukee in Wisconsin. So we worked in southeastern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, and we were primarily on the masonry side of the business. A lot of people that come in, come from, like, let's say, maintenance and lawn care. We came in from the masonry side, and very quickly we realized, this was back when segmental paving and segmental retaining walls were really starting to take off in this country. And I would say we grew pretty quickly throughout the mid 90s, but in the late 90s, we started to shift gears and really focus on outdoor living spaces that were designed with specific zones, right? You have the three core zones of kind of living, dining, and cooking. And what we realized, we did several large consumer trade shows in the spring, and we would do booths that were, let's say, 30 by 30. They were pretty big. They were very elaborate. And looking back, we clearly were ahead of our time. When I look at the current state even of what we're doing today, I mean, with pergolas, we had outdoor lighting, music, all of those features. And what we realized is, we struck a nerve. When people came in, we had the right music playing, we had the lighting, I mean, all of the above, things that are fairly standard today. But we realized that we struck a chord. People would come in, they would walk in the space, you could see them immediately sigh. They would sit down and on the couches and, you know, chairs that we had, and listen to the music, like, I love this, I want this, I want this exact space. And I always tell people that are in the business, if at the time we could have grown to 20 crews even in a market that has a season that's only 6 or 8 months, right? And so there's something about that space, again, that is driving people. And through the early 2000s, we grew consistently, but our gap was, at the time, there weren't nearly as many products in the market that were specific to outdoor living. So we were having to create things that weren't available even then to try to create an economical, consistent installation experience, right? Because it's one thing to do it full custom. I mean, lots of people like yourselves, full custom is amazing, but it's not attainable for everybody, right? Where
right.
we tried to straddle this line where we did plenty of full custom stuff, but we tried to create some consistency. And this is what led to where I'm at today. So I'm getting to the point here.
No, you're good.
What we were realizing is it would take us several years to train a foreman to get to the level where we could throw them on some of these projects, right? Because you're essentially building a house without a roof, right? You need all the same tradespeople, carpenters, plumbers, all of it, right? Pool installers, the whole nine yards to do a full outdoor space. And around 2006, we developed this modular system for creating fireplaces and kitchens, which we still use today, called Elements. So that was my company. We started doing that. We started to replicate, basically pre-building things indoors and then moving them into place with the machine. And so we're able to grow even faster. Well, ultimately, we grew so fast that I ended up selling that installation company, selling that off and focusing on manufacturing. Did that for 5 years and then sold that company to Oldcastle 11 years ago. So, but the whole idea in my mind the whole time was there's clearly a massive need here. Like there is something universal about this. How can we do this on a scale where it is attainable for the masses? And that's really when I think about who Oldcastle is and the products we develop and that suite of products, it is with that idea. I mean, clearly we do very custom projects everywhere, but how can we continue to streamline the assortment and help our contractors create something that is scalable, that is more cost effective and ultimately more efficient so that it does get in the hands of more people, right? And that's, so I would say we're really focused on growing this kind of quote semi-custom space, much like a large builder would do. Like you get 10 models and you can modify those. I mean, again, clearly we would still sell the bulk product, but when we think about product development and kind of how that all evolves and fits into this network, we think that is the biggest opportunity and ultimately it will reach the most people. So that was a long-winded answer, I think, maybe on how I became where I'm at today from being a contractor, but that's kind of the evolution of that.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf & Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Co. showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
Well, if you look at marketing at its core, I mean, this is the key example, right? You have to find the pain point of your customer. And essentially what you broke it down is that, hey, you know, people aren't, you know, they're in front of the TV too much. They're in the office too much. They're not getting outside. And so a lot of people may listen and say, okay, if you're in San Diego or Phoenix or Texas or Florida, yeah, you know, you're going to optimize outdoor space. It's pretty low hanging fruit. But you mentioned, I mean, you're in Northern Illinois, Wisconsin, which, you know, I've been there many times. Anyone knows that this isn't, you know, 360 days of sunlight over there. And even with the small season, the business exploded because you're offering something. And then not only are you offering a product that people want, but now you're trying to create a standardization, you know, so then that way it can be installed. Not everything's custom. And, you know, that's right. Kind of led these points of your career. And that's what I think a lot of people miss is they're trying to figure out how to, you know, scale or improve their business.
Yeah, it's funny. I moved to Georgia 9 years ago. We're based in Atlanta, so the Old Castle headquarters. I have 2 points here, but it's interesting when I moved down here, being from the Midwest. And to your point, you know, the weather is very iffy, and you don't have a lot of great days, right? Let's say in the summer. Being part of a company of the scale that we are, I mean, we sell product throughout North America, all the way from Alaska to the Caribbean. And when you look at like the North, for instance, when it is, because people will make this comment all the time to us, like, well, that's great. But yeah, if you live in San Diego or Phoenix or Atlanta, but not for me. But yeah. When you look at the reality, the average number of pools per capita is highest in markets like Minneapolis, right? Or even further north than that up into Canada. You think about, and I live there, right? And so, but when it's nice out in a market like that, people are outside all the time. Like it could be 50 degrees and sunny, 40 degrees and sunny, they're outside. Like this is the greatest day ever, right? When you're in an environment where it's nice all the time, you're like, yeah, it's not perfect. So it's a crappy day out, right? Like it's just the mentality shift. And I noticed that even moving to Georgia, right? The weather's not as great as Arizona, but it's still great. You get a lot of sun. People will apologize when it's, you know, I remember we're looking at houses, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, it's not a nice day. I'm like, it's 75 and overcast. Like, this is a beautiful day. So it's interesting the perspective. But when you think about that in that lens, it's like you can be in a cold weather climate and still absolutely grow an outdoor living business. I mean, people, doesn't matter where. But the other point I wanted to make is that when you, again, kind of going back to the semi-custom question for anybody who's listening, if you're in construction or even in design, I think anytime that you can scale it and make it so people still have choices, but you can value engineer it to some degree, you're ultimately going to prosper. There's room for everybody, obviously, at both ends of the spectrum. But if you want to build a business solely around outdoor living, if you can figure out a way to create that consistency and offer still options, but scale it, man, that's where we're at, man. We want to be your partner. Want to help with that because we believe this industry could be twice as big as it is today if we could crack that. The reality is, and this is true for all of landscaping, I would say the vast majority is full custom. So you think about like your process. Every time you start a home, if you start with a blank sheet of paper versus starting with something, there's a cost to that, right? There's time, there's back and forth. And some people love that. A lot of people don't love it, right? Because they're like, well, just give me some options. I don't want to have to pick out 50 different things, right? So I think that that's where I would say our focus, as I mentioned, our focus is, and for those who are looking to scale, there's a lot of creative ways to do that. Creative things that I didn't have 20 years ago in my arsenal when thinking about how to approach that. So
how has that experience, you know, expanded in your role? Essentially, your title is Vice President of Design. You know, what does that entail at Old Castle with, you know, the amount of volume and product you have?
That's a great question. So this is a fairly new role. I've had several roles. I think they're still trying to find a spot for me after 11 years. Somebody from the company is probably listening or yell at me. We have dozens of brands, right? You think about, we have Belgard, which is the most well-known, which mainly hardscape products, pavers and walls, kitchens. We also own a company called Sacrete, which a lot of people
know.
Our Echelon masonry products. We recently acquired a company called Barrette Outdoor Living. So we are now the largest producer of fence and rail in the country. Aluminum, we've got different types of metal, vinyl. We own lawn and garden business, so bag soils and mulches. We own Moisture Shield, which is a composite deck company. So my role, and a lot of this has to do with my background. Number one, I'm passionate about design. I manage a design team. I do 3D renders, animations, AR, all of that. I love that. I love creating those spaces. But my role really is to help really create a strategy and try to guide the product development teams, the marketing and sales teams to create an ecosystem and a process that is, as I mentioned, scalable, right? Like how do we simplify this? Because again, going back to a couple of points earlier, it's not easy today, right? It's not easy to get the full space, right? If you start talking about pools and structures and lighting, like that is very complex. And for better or worse, there are not the types of regulations that you would have, right, as a general contractor to go through and receive, you know, accreditations and licensing for. So for us, it's how do we kind of wrangle all these different components? And we have specialists that, let's say, just do fencing all the way to decking, the pools. We have a handful that do all of it, but we don't have enough that do all of it, given what the demand is. And so how do we create something that is simple for them to understand and to go after? So that's kind of a high level view of what my role is to kind of look at this macro view and try to come up with solutions that that make it easier and more cost effective.
And you mentioned that you had your own contracting company in the outdoor space, you know, for many years there in the Wisconsin Midwest area. And then you went into manufacturing before you were acquired by Oldcastle. What was it that you went into?
So we had a patented process for making modular outdoor kitchens and fireplaces, fire features. So we had a facility that we literally a plant that we had 30,000 square feet. We produced these for 5 years for multiple companies. The timing of that, I would say, wasn't great because we started about 6 months before the recession. So that 5 years was a little bit of a roller coaster. You know, I think we were ahead of our time. I mean, I think there's definitely was a need, but it wasn't the level of what we see today in terms of just the sheer scale of outdoor living. But it was that was a big adjustment. So going from contracting for so many years to doing manufacturing and then selling that and coming into a corporate environment, that's probably why I don't have a lot of hair left, but it was fairly stressful and having five kids in the process somewhere in between all that. it's given me an interesting perspective, right? Because you see things like, you know, as a builder and contracting, you obviously have that firsthand experience. On the manufacturing side, unless you've lived it, you're just trying to guess that, or you're living vicariously through conversations of trying to understand that. It's been great, man. I can't say enough good things about the company. It was a transition for the first year or two, but I love it. I get to interact with people throughout the country now and talk about this stuff, which is great.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I mean, you can feel your passion. Anyone that's watching or listening, I mean, they're going to feel that just, you know, hearing you speak, Joe. You mentioned that, you know, and a lot of us that are familiar with the Oldcastle brand, right? It is, you touched on this from Sacrete, and you do mulch and pavers, Belgard, that most of us have heard, you know of, and masonry and stucco and all these different lines. Mm-hmm. It's a global company. How complex is it? Because now you're working in different markets locally, or I should say nationally, you know, in throughout mm-hmm. the greater US, you're global, you're in other markets. How does design, how does product, you know, differentiate not only here in the US, but even outside the US?
That's a great question. So for those who don't know, I mean, so Oldcastle is a division within a publicly traded company called CRH. CRH is based in Dublin, Ireland. It's been around for a long, long time. It actually, the APG business, which we're an architectural product group, was formed in 1978. A couple of gentlemen from Ireland came over and bought a block plant in Salt Lake City, which is still there today. We still own it. And from that, the APG business alone has grown into 240 production locations throughout North America. And it's interesting because I mentioned all those products that we have, and we've recently added a lot of products that were not part of our original core, which is more of the masonry and aggregates and, you know, kind of those heavy products. We do have a lot of sister companies as well in Europe that have similar products, you know, Marlux, Ale, you know, all over Northern Europe that are producing pavers and walls. And so the interesting thing is, so we've got our group here, which I would say the approach is a little bit different. The scale of outdoor living in this country is far and away much larger, just given the size of the homes and
like land.
Yeah,
and
land. All of the above. Yeah. I mean, I think they shake their heads a little bit. Like, you know, it's crazy. But the per capita usage of pavers in Europe is far exceeds what we do, but they're doing roads and everything, right? Where we're just doing it in typically pedestrian applications.
Right.
So we have this, but what's interesting is we have this perspective coming from a design perspective, which is very common in all of construction and in, you know, home furnishings, where a lot of trends happen in Europe and then they kind of trickle over to, let's say, Eastern Canada or into New York. They'll leapfrog that and go over to LA, and then they'll take a few years and kind of filter into the middle of the country. So that's kind of the progression of how those trends happen. So we're able to see some insights into what's happening there and get ahead of that. You know, we have a full team of R&D people up in Montreal that are constantly working on different solutions. But I think the cool thing for us is, you know, now that we've acquired these other parts of the portfolio, is this kind of cross-pollination of ideas, right? Because thinking about, like, if I was just a railing producer, I may not know anything about pavers or especially masonry. Well, now we have all these different experts that are collaborating and starting to create things that are totally different. And thinking through, like, this is part of what I love. I look at something like, that's a great idea. But if you just tweaked it just a little bit, it would fit with this and this and this and make it so much easier. I don't think, and that's just part of creating things, right? Where if you don't know what you don't know, but when you get people together who are experts and you start to talk, I mean, it's exponential, right? You start to think about all the things that could be. And so for us, I think we're just at the very beginning of what we're seeing is possible, right? So our outdoor living has reached a certain point, but I think now that we're looking at it in a holistic view and not just pavers, not just decking, you know, I'm excited about where we're headed with creative ideas, creating efficient products, creating solutions that, you know, are unprecedented. So I'm not sure if that answered your questions.
No, it did. I, you know, there's a point I want to touch on because I think it's fascinating. You mentioned that by offering these different scopes, right, that we have, you know, there's some collaboration, you know, there's ideas that are transferred between the parties that make, you know, our product and brand even better. You know, the analogy for me is that Spencer, who's my essentially director of operations, you know, his background was, he did high end luxury and then he went to do commercial construction for a while. And in commercial construction, you know, they do what's called a pool plan meeting, right? And essentially mm-hmm. it's PULO. They're bringing in all the trades, right? As you're going through the sequencing and phasing of building a high rise or a large commercial project. You know, a lot of us are specialized in our specific trade or scope, but you bring them all in a room and you say, okay, Joe and Brad, like you get commitments for manpower and durations, and you essentially are building mm-hmm. the schedule and sequencing and phasing it, right? To be yep. more efficient, more accurate. And what I found is with some of the complex projects that we're doing, we're bringing our selected subs that were awarded the project in our conference room. And by going through this exercise, not only are you working at high efficiency for the schedule, but you're also finding, you know, little issues with probably some of the details or plans, or this right. can be reconfigured this way. And so what ends up happening is you're solving a lot of the issues at pre-construction before you go vertical. Mm-hmm. And essentially what you're saying, Joe, is by doing that same thing, by understanding how things are being built and constructed, and now, you know, as they're mixed together with other products, well, now we're taking to the next level, which essentially gives you the upper hand, the upper advantage, and sets you apart in the marketplace.
Yeah, I would say it's the exact same thing. And I think, you know, when you think about these spaces, you live this every day, right? They may have 25 different products in there. So you think it from a design perspective, and this is really my passion is how do you do that efficiently, right? If especially if all those products were never designed to work together. Think about creating a mood board, right? Like, well, does this light finish look good with this paver? Does this look good with the cushion? But I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole with this. And it's very time consuming, right? And you think about, like, for instance, how we buy paint. If you go to Sherwin-Williams, you can get a swatch that has, hey, these five colors are paired together, right? We're starting to do that more. And we have, you know, a trend of like architectural black, for instance. We have a whole line of products now that is designed to work together that has that same style, right? Not just style, but it's shape, color, texture. And then ultimately, how does it actually create efficiency for the contractor? Like to the point of, yeah, this all looks great, but how do you mechanically build this, right? That's the other part, which I would say is oftentimes overlooked, right? It's because you're not thinking about it as a system. You're thinking about, well, I'm just designing a railing and I don't know how the other parts that work with it work together. So that's why I say, I feel like we're at our infancy because some of these acquisitions are fairly recent. They're still running their businesses the way they were essentially when we acquired them, but we're looking at everything now through the lens of, does this have the right shape, color, and texture to fit into a broader ecosystem? And then does it make it easier for our contractors to install it, right? And if it doesn't, why not? What can we do to make it better? Because we all know the contracting world is getting thinner and thinner in terms of just the sheer number of people who are entering it. And so we got to come up with solutions that utilize latest technologies with, and even things like robotics with mechanical lifting equipment. All of the above, I would say, is on the table when we look at how we get these spaces into the hands of people more efficiently. So to me, that's exciting because I love collaborating. I think you will always come up with something better if you can collaborate with people and talk through it with other experts.
Always. And I'm a huge proponent of that. I've seen so many efficiencies put into place in our company from that collaboration and with our vendors, right? And our suppliers. I mean, there's so much knowledge each of you have, and why not optimize that, right? Why are we trying to figure out, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, you know, ourselves. And you give a good example, Joe. I mean, you talked about the three zones and you said, look, there's living, there's dining, there's cooking, right? And in this outdoor space, the example you gave, you know, you could be doing with 20 products and essentially whoever's doing the outdoor area is a mini GC. They're a mini general contractor, managing ton of scope. They may not have the experience accreditation as some of the big GCs in town, but essentially they're doing the same thing without a roof, as you mentioned. How does one become, whether it be continuing education or resources, what's out there for those that are looking to be experts in the outdoor space or use Old Castle more frequently in their builds?
Yeah. I mean, we have a ton of resources online and depending on which facet of that you're interested in. I would say, you know, I talk about this often, like the biggest opportunity I feel in the outdoor living space is for someone to become essentially a GC of the space, because the vast majority of the people you deal with, they don't have the time or the wherewithal to basically manage all those subcontractors. And quite often they're forced to if they want the space, and many people do, but it creates a lot of frustration. So I would say, number one, if you think you want that, well, first of all, I would say step back for a minute and try to do a self-assessment. A lot of contractors, I would say, I was including me back in the day, didn't do that as often. Like, what do I want to be? How big do I want to get? What type of business do I want? Once you figure that out, then go attack it and figure out, like, find somebody who's done it, you know, and we have lots of people that we can connect you with. If you came to us, for instance, you say, hey, I'm in Phoenix and I want to become an outdoor living contractor, a true full-blown outdoor living contractor, we can help make the connections with people in that market that are specialists in every facet of the space. If you just want to remain a specialist, we can connect you with the GCs who are looking for those people. But we do have a lot of online resources. We're continually building those out, different platforms with e-learning. We have Bell Gardening universities where people can go and you know, take full day sessions, get accreditations through the different trades. I think we still have a long way to go with that. I'm just, you know, kind of going back to, I would say probably 90% of our contractors are pretty highly specialized in one facet of the space. They're either deck builders, pool builders, you know, paver layers, you know, and again, that's fine. But if you really want to help your homeowner get to the space, either need to become the GC or you need to find other partners that you can refer and kind of collaborate with to create those spaces. I think the level of frustration people have with trying to get these done is off the charts in many cases, because they're like, who do I call for lighting? Who do I call? How do I get a permit to run a gas line for a kitchen? Right? These are questions that oftentimes are put back on the homeowner, which, I mean, most people don't know it. They have no idea. So I would say whatever piece of that you are participating in, at least find people or learn more to help your client.
That's really good advice. So what keeps you up at night?
Oh boy. Probably my kids. I think it is the labor piece. I think that there's, you know, if I look at it from selfishly from the Oldcastle perspective, I think labor is going to be our biggest obstacle to growth. I think there's absolutely, you know, unprecedented demand for what we're doing. Labor and training and like all of that, it kind of together is the thing that we need to solve. And I would say our industry needs to solve, mm-hmm. right? It's the lack of consistency, oversight. I'm not necessarily an advocate of regulation, but some type of a structure that people can comfortably, you know, rely on as a homeowners is key. I would say that for me is what I'm concerned most about. And again, I'm also concerned about that for the next generation. I think there's tons of opportunities. I think even, you know, how do we recruit and create excitement for that next generation to come into this business? I look at what today is versus 30 years ago when I started, the tools, the equipment, the knowledge, the products, like it's all there for the taking. If someone is thinking about getting into this, we have the experts, you know, throughout to really help guide them and create a successful business. But I don't think as an industry, we've done a great job telling our story to get people to come into it. And we need to do a better job at that.
And it's interesting. I think there's two parts. I mean, you touch on the labor, which is a big concern, I think, for all of us builders, contractors, suppliers, you know, especially in the next 20, 30 years. Ideally, you know, through social media and education, you know, I think people are seeing that there's a lot of avenues to be successful. You don't have to go to college and trades mm-hmm. are needed. Labor's needed. I think so many people can build a highly successful career going into the trades. So, mm-hmm. so that's one aspect is the labor. The second thing is a lot of us are creatures of habit, right? So what ends up happening is products are getting more complex. They're bigger, right? People want, you know, bigger Belgar pavers, right? They want bigger slabs. And I've seen now that like some of our installers, at least the savvy ones, you know, they almost have a similar, like you're using these suction cups on a mirror, like our mirror guys who are putting mm-hmm. For these big heavy pavers that can weigh 150, 200 pounds. You know, and it's shocking because how travertine and different pavers and concrete products are pitted, but yet it still works. Yep. And that's where, you know, there has to be an education of some of the tools and resources out there that probably weren't there years ago.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. We, and over the last 5 years, the number of specialty tools that have come out is just mind boggling. Like your point, people do want larger format. I mean, you look at the Europeans, for instance, a 3-foot by 4-foot paver now is not uncommon. Now those might be used more for industrial type applications, but how do you maneuver that, right? You get over 100 pounds, it starts to become, you know, hazard to really to some degree to install. So, but there's things like, you know, vac lifts that are 2-person where, you know, 2 people with a simple vac lift, I mean, that might cost $2,500 can lift 150-pound slab and they set it. So you think about the efficiency, they're not on their hands and knees. They're just walking over. They're picking it up together. They're laying it down, you know, 4 or 5 square feet at a time sometimes. So you think about it, it doesn't necessarily cost more, but to your point on the creatures of habit piece, it's, you know, we still fight where they're like, well, you know, our crew can lay 10 pallets a day and there's, you know, I could do 4 pallets an hour. I'm like, but can you do that every day consistently for 30 years? I would argue no. And you wouldn't want to do that to your body. But you have to show them the alternatives. Like, and we're partnering with companies like Pave Tool and Optimus who have specialty equipment. But that's happening throughout all of construction, right? With, you know, the masonry side, with really all aspects of trying to pair that up, where I would say today, if you have the right tools, and I've seen with this with a lot of hardscape and outdoor living contractors, you can get away with maybe 2 people on your crew, right? So you're investing in specialty tools where you're literally not breaking your back. You're not straining yourself. It's all mechanical. And, you know, you go home at night and you can sleep well. You don't have to go to the chiropractor. Like there are ways to approach it that don't require it. Like I was saying earlier, I think we haven't done a good enough job outlining what that looks like, what that ideal scenario or setup looks like. And then more importantly, making sure that next generation sees that, right? Because yes, we are producing, you know, products that are concrete and stone and, you know, very basic overall, but the methods for that design and installation are radically changing, and we're embracing technology to do that. So.
Well, it's incredible. And I love that you're at the forefront of this, Joe. You know, as we get to closing here, because you've been gracious with your time, best advice you've been given?
You know, I love the idea that, you know, that we're always learning. I think, you know, that's something whenever you think you got it figured out. I mean, the older I get, the more I realize I don't know anything. So I think the idea that you're just constantly a student, right? And talking with people and trying to make connections and looking at things from a different perspective. For me, I think that makes all the difference. You know, there's nothing worse than having an employee who's not teachable, right? You've probably experienced, like, if somebody thinks they know everything, then you're going to have a problem. And some of the most successful people that I've ever met are very curious, like curious about you, your personal life, what you're doing, the products, like, and that curiosity, I think, I think it drives people and it leads to great things. Right. And I think if we're all able to kind of keep that open mind, we'd all be better for it. So.
That's really good advice. I think, if you don't continue to push yourself and that continued education, right, it's going to pass you by, right? It's that quote, the only constant is change, right? So you better adapt. But,
for sure.
Yeah. And what do you do for fun?
I think you mentioned earlier, we love to hike. I love being outdoors. I kayak. I love music. I love art, photography. I mean, everything, family, outdoors, like anything related to that. I love being in outdoor living spaces, sitting around the campfire, live music, all of that that's what drives me, man. It's awesome.
Well, I appreciate the passion. I mean, Joe, I think for anyone listening, it's been a real treat to hear about, not only your story, but with Oldcastle and Bellegarde and how me selfishly as a general contractor, how these things can set us apart. Right. So for those listening, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. That might be the easiest spot. So it's under Joe Raboin. You can reach out to me directly if you want to email me, joe.raboin, RABOINE, at oldcastle.com. I'm always looking for great conversations and collaborations. And I love trying to entertain people in terms of if they have an idea, reach out and I'd set something up and talk to you. But Brad, I appreciate it immensely. And I appreciate your business. I think the home you built for Ted and the project that he did, absolutely amazing. And we truly appreciate it.
Well, the feeling's mutual. I mean, you've been a great partner of ours for, as I mentioned, 20 years that I've been building here in Phoenix. So thank you, Joe. Appreciate you.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for inviting me on the podcast.
If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes, please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.